Hi, this is Steve Bose, co-host of the HR Happy Hour Show. We are really excited today to announce the launch of a new podcast on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network titled The Human Friendly Workplace Podcast, hosted by our friend Jason Lauridsen. This show is all about how organizations are making work more human. We're really excited to have Jason on board, thrilled to have him as part of our family. And remember to subscribe to all the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network shows on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take it away, Jason.
Welcome to the Human Friendly Workplace Podcast. I am your host, Jason Lauridsen, keynote speaker, author, and employee engagement fanatic. In each episode, we'll bring you stories from leaders and organizations who are succeeding by making work more human. These stories will inspire and equip you to do the same for your employees. This podcast is powered by the good people at Small Improvements who share my passion for making the workplace more human-friendly. Small Improvements creates technology to help you promote the ongoing conversations at work that people crave. Clients love their lightweight, flexible approach to feedback and performance. You will too. Check them out at small-improvements.com. That's small-improvements.com. Enjoy today's episode. My guest today is Graham Moody from Ansarada. Graham, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks, Jason. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you.
Excellent. So you're the people and culture manager at Ansarada. And as I understand it, we chatted a little bit about 140 employees. You are headquartered in Sydney, Australia. But tell us a little bit more about you and about the organization, if you would, please.
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I head up the people and culture function at Ansarada. We're actually fast approaching 200 employees, so we're kind of growing pretty fast. But we, Ansarada, is a founder-led technology company. We've been around about coming up to 12 years. And for the first 11 years of our existence, we're really designed around helping companies and their advisors run due diligence processes in high-value business transactions. So if you think about mergers and acquisitions, fundraising, IPOs, there's a lot of due diligence that goes on in those transactions, and our platform would support that and make it easier, safer, and hopefully more successful event. More recently, in the last sort of 18 months, we've really been sort of challenging, you know, where we're going and how we can solve more of our customers' problems in those areas. And kind of led us to the question of, particularly around mergers and acquisitions, why is it that a business is often in its best shape at the end of its life cycle? So once all of that due diligence is done, all the paperwork's in order, and the documentation, the business is optimized for maximizing its value. But it's a shame that that happens at the end of its life cycle. So over the last 18 months, we've been sort of repositioning ourselves with new products, you know, really kind of leveraging sort of AI and machine learning to help people better understand what the risks and opportunities are in that business earlier and also at any time. So, you know, we recently launched a new product, leveraging our experience of running over 20,000 due diligence-based deals, you know, really around this platform that helps raise and protect the potential of people and their businesses, and helping them always be ready for what's next. So, you know, in amongst all of that, we've been scaling towards 200 people. As I said earlier, we've got offices in Sydney, Australia, where our headquarters is, and then teams in Vietnam, New York, Chicago, and London. So that's all kind of been a year of transformation, new products, totally different business model. All of our internal operations have been changing. And from a people and culture perspective, we've been trying to get on the front foot in terms of how we scale and evolve our culture to, you know, align and support to that transformation and what the future looks like.
So it sounds like, if I understand what you just described, I mean, that sounds like, I mean, a pretty massive kind of pivot, or at least a fairly significant pivot on products, while at the same time you are growing. I think that the number I had written down, I think maybe was from a year ago, in terms of employees. So you're growing quickly. You're pivoting products, or you're pivoting kind of what, you know, where your business is headed. That's a lot of change. So from a cultural perspective, how did you tackle that? What did, I mean, what did that mean in terms of culture shift?
Yeah, I guess one of the major programs we tackled, was, I guess, just looking at, culture holistically. And, to set the scene as a kind of research and looked at other companies and what they were doing, like the best definition I've landed on in terms of culture is that it's an experience. And when people describe culture, inevitably they end up describing the experience they have, when they join an organization, when they visit an organization. And for us as a people and culture team, it's about how can we craft an experience that gets the best out of our people. And if we create an experience that gets the best out of our people, that inevitably that experience shows up in, the products and services, we provide to our customers. So the experience you create here inevitably shows up in the customer experience that we put out into the market. And a key driver of that is obviously the values of the organization. And we're big believers that values drive behaviors and those behaviors drive results. And considering the sort of transformation, the pivot, as you put it, which is quite true, we sort of asked ourselves the question around, hey, what's our culture's been great and it's helped us be really successful, but, will what got us here, continues to get to that new destination, which is a much, much bigger result. And are the values still the best values to drive those behaviors that will achieve that bigger result? So it was a very deep sort of question to sort of pose ourselves, but everybody seemed up for the challenge in the business and were kind of excited by it. So we kind of put a 4-step process, and the key sort of fundamentals to the process were to make it really sort of collaborative and engage the entire workforce in this discussion. It's their culture, and culture is going to happen. Our view was, well, if culture is going to happen, let's try and put some guardrails on it and influence that culture so that the culture and the values that sit within it are tightly aligned to our strategies and vision that we're trying to achieve. So we kind of led it with the leadership team initially to just kind of diagnose, what were the enablers to success in our culture today or back then? What were the blockers? And then we kind of wrote all of that up and started to narrow down what was working with the current values, maybe what some of the things that we could improve on and what some potentially new values could be. And we shared all of that with the team. We ran a survey. We had well over 100 responses, gave us some of the richest data we've had in terms of how people think and feel about our culture and values. Pretty big task to extract the insights from all of that.
Can imagine.
Yeah, unstructured data, but it was incredible. And that helped us formulate and propose some alternative values that we felt were really going to drive the behaviors and the success that the future opportunity was presented in front of us, and went through another round of feedback on that. So we went through all of that and launched the new values at the start of this year, January. I have to be honest and say, based on some recent feedback, we didn't nail it. And I say that because, we've recently run some more surveys, and focus groups on this. And I'd say people, believe in the new values in terms of they're the right values for the organization. I feel like we could have done more to really nail the expression of those values in terms of the definitions, the meaning, what great looks like. And also a better job in terms of integrating those into a day-to-day practice and commitment to help people see and understand what good looks like and how important the organization. So it's not insurmountable, but I think, I think many organizations wouldn't touch this stuff. So I kind of like the fact that we had courage, to tackle this on. I think people get really, really connected to culture and values. And
sure.
Very protective of it if we try and change anything. So
there's even kind of a narrative in our, I think there's a narrative even within HR or within org development that values are sort of the thing that is lasting, right? They're the bedrocks and the values don't change. All this other stuff can change, but values don't. So, it's pretty courageous, I think, to step into that. I'm curious, can you give an example of how you, how one value got replaced by another that was sort of a substantial move? Is there sort of one that stands out that is a, that sort of plays out the the change or how the culture moved to support the new business direction?
Yeah, and I can give you a good one that's probably a good example of how well it's gone. And I think, you know, it's a challenge around sort of scaling the business. I think, you know, when I joined 6 years ago, we were about 40 people. And it was very easy for the CEO and key leaders to touch everybody in the business and really impart, you know, the values and what they mean to the organization. And the focus on the customer has always been really, really important, you know, from the founders and CEO down. But I think over time, as we've scaled and, you know, inevitably some silos start to creep in, that connection with the customer started to fall away a bit. So we introduced one of the new values was, you know, a value totally focused on the customer and that everything we do is from and for them. And in the recent research and surveys and polls that we did, like it's 94%, you know, across the board, the connection in terms of how important that value is, the understanding of why it's relevant to Ansarada and people in their role, and also the commitment and practice to really serving our customers in everything that we do. So I think that's really kind of been a big success story in terms of closing that gap in terms of how people who maybe aren't on the front line speaking to customers every day really feel connected to you know, the customer, and importantly, how that connects back to their role in the organization. So whether it's somebody on my team in, you know, recruitment or people and culture or you know, somebody in finance, then they still understand that everything they do is ultimately geared towards, you know, helping customers solve their problems.
Mm. Excellent. So you're still kind of on the journey. With the feedback that you've gotten now, is it that you said, you know, you need to go further? Is the next step then just providing more sort of connection points or sort of descriptors as to how the values play out in behavior? Is that what I sort of heard you kind of imply by the feedback that you'd gotten?
Yeah, a bit of a mix of stuff there. I think one of the key things, and I think it's in hindsight, which is easy to say, I think it's just something we could have been more intentional about. And in the midst of a lot of other transformations, so building and launching new products, we went through a whole rebrand, you know, in terms of our presence in the market. Our whole go-to-market strategies changed. Our internal processes and operations have changed. I think we probably took our eye off the ball a little bit and felt that, hey, we've just done such a good job collaborating and ideating on what the value should be and launching them. There wasn't sufficient follow-through to make sure that they were really embedded. There is a key difference between, you know, people who have joined in the last year feel pretty strongly connected to the values, but people who were, you know, emotionally attached to the old set of values, you know, still require some more, not convincing, but I guess more work to help them really connect and understand and express, you know, what they mean. And I
sure
think work in that area.
Sure. So sticking with values, I know that you do some really interesting things with values also at an individual level. As I understand it, it starts right from day one when people kind of join the organization, that you help them think about and connect to individual values. Can you talk a little bit about how that works and sort of how you approach that and maybe why that's so important to you?
Yeah, sure. It's always good to start with a why. So I think fundamentally it comes from a very good place in our sort of culture. And, you know, from day one of the company, when the founders set it up, it wasn't just about making profits. It was about creating a great workplace for people to grow and develop themselves personally and professionally. So I think there's a genuine care for people at Ansarada and appreciation for people as a whole and not just workers. So a lot of what we do from a, you know, organization and people and culture perspective is about helping, you know, make their life easier so that they can produce the best work. Part of that is creating a great leadership sort of culture and foundation in the business. And part of that leadership sort of philosophy is kind of anchored around servant-based leadership. So first and foremost, your role as a leader is to serve your people, you know, and help them succeed. And a key component of that, one of the practices we set up there, is all geared around like to really serve your people and lead your people the best. There needs to be a solid foundation of trust, and that requires transparency, and it requires leaders to be really comfortable being vulnerable with their teams as well. And you know, if we can establish that, then there's a deeper connection with people. You can really find out what's most important to them, and if you can really align that to their goals professionally, personally, then I think you can amplify, you know, the potential in that person. So that's kind of where it all comes from. So the actual practice itself is an exercise that helps managers and individuals discover and share and learn from each other in terms of what their personal values are. And basically in practice, it's a deck of cards with a bunch of values, different values in them and definitions of what they are. And there's an exercise to kind of go through this deck and sort of narrow it down to your top five. The leader goes first, and this comes back to the piece on vulnerability. So you can't expect somebody to just open up, and it's probably pretty unusual compared to most organizations to do this sort of exercise. So, you know, if you've worked in three or four different organizations and you suddenly join Ansarada and you're expected to reveal your deepest, darkest secrets about your inner workings,
sure,
be a bit confrontational. So I wouldn't suggest this happens on day one, but at some point during your onboarding plan, your manager will kind of explain, you know, a bit more about where this comes from and also start to share their values and the stories that, you know, surround those values. So my top five around family, trust, growth, accountability, and integrity. And each of those values has a personal story as to why trust is important to me, why accountability is important to me. And it helps forge that deeper connection and understanding. And if they can, my team can understand that of me, then I'm sure it would drive their actions and behaviors to better align to me. And it works the other way around as well. So once there's enough trust there, you know, the individual, you know, should be willing to share their top five and share some of the stories that, you know, surround their values. And in terms of leadership, you know, you can sort of follow up with, you know, well, as your leader, like, when am I at my best in the context of your values? When am I at my worst? And if we're operating in a way that conflicts with an individual's values, then, you know, inevitably things are not going to go as well as they could be. If we can operate in a way that's tightly aligned and empathetic and really understanding of what's important to that person, there's going to be a high degree of engagement, you know, commitment and ultimately performance in that individual as well. So it's pretty unique. I think it's a delicate area. We train managers on how to do it and how to do it well. Give them guidance on when's the right time. If an individual is not coming to the table, then you can't force them. That's just an indicator that, hey, I need to kind of work on building a bit more trust with that individual.
So a couple questions on that. One is the deck that you described that you use, the values cards, is that something that you created or is that a tool that you found somewhere? I imagine people that are listening are curious about that. Is that something you built?
Yeah, we actually work with John Maxwell Company, and that's a leadership program that we brought into Ansarada. I'm sure similar decks exist elsewhere, or you know, companies could even craft one themselves. But that's the deck we use, and it's probably got about 50, you know, different values in there and definitions. And it's literally, you know, cull that down to yeses and noes, what's important to me, and then cull it down to your top 10 and then cull it again to your top five. Very challenging exercise and quite revealing as a sort of self-awareness and reflective exercise to do on your own. And even, you know, we found people have gone home and shared it with, you know, wise partners, friends, and you know, often said it's been quite an emotional discussion because, yeah, for many people, it's just not a place that you would often go to without this sort of facilitation and you know, tools to get there.
I commend you for doing that because I think it's, you know, so often I would suspect that most of your employees, this is the first time anybody's ever asked them to think about their personal values. I mean, other than just sort of an aside, because you know, you ask people if they are clear in their values, they'll say yes. But then if you ask them, what are they? The conversation ends pretty quickly. So I would guess a lot of times it's the first time they've ever been confronted with this. And the fact that they're being asked or supported through this at work is pretty amazing. But I also, I'm assuming there are probably times where it does take some people a while to warm up to that because it's unexpected, I guess, at the very least. But it's a pretty awesome practice.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I, in the most part, I see it works really well. And as I said, like if somebody really, really doesn't want to go there and they see the workplace as a workplace and, you know, my personal stuff is really not up for discussion, then we park it. You know, we sure. Certainly force people. What I would say, though, is that the better that we express our culture and that genuine care and our belief in sort of transparency and vulnerability is that we build that into our hiring practices. So, you know, we're not just kind of taking a punt and bringing people in and then saying, hey, you know, how would you feel about sure. doing it? Trying to engineer a hiring practice that cultivates and brings people in that really fit with our beliefs in terms of openness and transparency to kind of as a facilitator of, you know, great performance and success.
So I'm curious if you have you found any situations where an individual's, you know, once they came through their value sort, or even maybe as a particular team came together, or, you know, something where the values created some sort of or revealed some sort of disconnect or some sort of conflict? Like, does it, I mean, usually we talk about values and we want to talk about them all and sort of all the wonderful things that they do. And they do a lot of things and they, but one of the things they're really powerful about is alignment. When you find a misalignment, has that played out, or do you, you know, what happens when there's a values disconnect?
Yeah, as you were talking, like I was thinking of like an example in myself. So I think this whole process and the way that we designed the leadership was very revealing, you know, for myself, and really kind of connecting with what's important to me. And even more revealing is like how far and deep those things go back to. Like sometimes people just don't want to go there, or it's actually quite difficult getting there on your own. So, but what it helps you reveal is, like, you know, everybody's got their little nuances and in terms of how they behave and act in certain situations. And for me, I remember being in a meeting and, you know, somebody made a comment around, hey, you know, I think we need to have a bit more integrity here. And like, it was like a dagger in my heart. I remember having this kind of real fight flight reaction. I think it was more fight, so it wasn't the best reaction from me. Sure. But like later applying this exercise to that, I was like, oh man, I wasn't at my best there. And now I kind of have a deeper understanding why. Like somebody challenged me on a fundamental value at my core, and it just evokes this like uncontrolled sort of reaction. So that level of self-awareness just puts you more in the driving seat. The other examples I think of in terms of your question is like some more obvious things when people, often when their personal values don't really connect with, you know, our values and philosophies as an organization. So there's really obvious ones like integrity. You know, there's, you know, organizations I've worked in and many out there where, you know, the politics of the business, start to become more self-serving than serving others. And I really feel like that's when people come unstuck at Ansarada. If they get through the gate and into the business, it quickly gets noticed and sniffed out. So I think they're the obvious ones that you see come through.
Excellent. Thank you for that. I guess on the value side, with these individual values, do they, how do you formally pull those in? Are those sort of pulled through into performance processes or other sort of processes organizationally? Like you shared your five with us here. How do you operationalize around those values once they have them clear, or once they willingly sort of go through the process?
Not to a great extent. I would say we've stayed true to the sort of, you know, why we do it, the purpose. And it's really around forging a deeper connection between a manager and their direct report. So outside of that, and because it's so personal in nature, I think it's all about that relationship and less about, hey, let's roll all of this up and take an aggregate view of, you know, what people's most important personal values are. We've done other exercises around sort of strengths and, you know, using Strengths Finder, your top five strengths, and roll that data up in terms of like how balanced are we in terms of the strengths that we have in the organization. But the personal values for me, because they are so personal and I just haven't felt the need or the aggregate those up. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and I suppose just once you have that kind of self-awareness and clarity around your what your five are, and if as a manager or a leader, if you understand those about your people, it's going to naturally sort of organically work its way into processes and the decisions you make. You probably don't need to operationalize it to see the benefit, I wouldn't guess.
Yeah, I think it's more the helping leaders operate situationally. So, yep. One-on-one with Graham, what do I know about him in terms of his values, his career aspirations, his current goals and priorities? What else is going on in his day-to-day life? How can I bring all of those inputs together to have a great conversation, whatever the context might be? And then when I go into my next one-on-one with Kate, how does that dynamic change? And so I think it's just another tool that goes into the manager's toolkit to better connect and get performance and understanding with people.
Excellent. So we are running up against our time. So I want to finish with the question that I like to ask everyone at the end of the podcast, and that's this: what one piece of advice or single piece of advice would you offer to someone who is trying to create a human-friendly workplace for their own employees and their own organization?
Yeah, good one. One piece of advice. I think it's inherently hard to create something like a human-friendly workplace if the organization and the leaders within it don't want to go there. So, you know, speaking from a HR or people and culture perspective, I think it's really important that you take the time to discover and probe what the fundamental beliefs and philosophies are of an organization, you know, if you're looking to move. And I think your life and, your passions and the results you can achieve are inherently going to be more successful and easier if they're aligned to, you know, what the leaders of the business want to achieve. So I'm very blessed that I've got founders and a leadership team that's evolved over time to work alongside that. I have a strong belief similar to mine that if we really invest in people, it's not only the right thing to do, but we know we reap the benefits of that through the performance of our business. So sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but if you think you're going to kind of walk into an organization that's fundamentally about profits, then I think it's going to be a very, very big challenge to try and change that, particularly at scale. I think there's a faster, more impactful outcome if you can find somewhere that really aligns to your passions and beliefs.
Yeah, it's hard to move an organization if the leaders are resistant of going where you want them to go. And I think the other side is if you follow your advice and you really dig in and understand what the fundamental beliefs are, at least then you know that, you know, rather than going to work on a bunch of programming that's not going to be supported, you probably need to work on influencing your leadership to see if you can bring them around.
Yeah. That's right. And there's always tension at Ansarada. There's always tension because we've, you know, we've got big goals to hit. And, you know, that balance of, you know, investing time in some of the programs I've talked about today is a challenge when leaders have got, you know, and individuals got many, many other tasks and priorities to complete and deadlines to meet. It's like, when is there a good time to take a couple of hours out over a coffee and talk about your values? Like, that's tension, but long term, it's got dividends. It's not an insignificant investment, but I believe the returns are, you know, far exceed that investment.
Absolutely. Well, Graham, thank you so much for joining me, and also congratulations on the great work. It sounds like you're really doing some interesting and important work there, and thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure, Jason.
All right. Take care. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thank you for joining me for this episode of The Human Friendly Workplace. If you'd like to connect with me to share feedback or recommend a future guest, please email me at jason@jasonlortzen.com. That's jason@jasonlortzen.com. And a very special thank you to Small Improvements for making today's podcast possible. If you enjoyed it, you can thank us by subscribing wherever you get your favorite podcasts and recommending it on to others who you think might find it worthwhile. We'll see you next time.